This week on Reality Check, we have in the studio Gordon Clay. He's a concerned citizen and longtime advocate on issues like suicide and bullying. Today, we're going to talk about suicide, a really important issue in our community. Hi, Gordon.
Hi, Lee. It's really good to be here.
I'm so thankful we could put this together.
Me too.
Yeah. I wonder if you could maybe start us off by saying a little bit about what brought you to be concerned about suicide. What's been that process?
Well, being a little graphic, actually, I guess I want to say one thing first.
Okay.
This is Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yes.
And what we may get into tonight is some things that might trigger somebody listening on the air. And if they find that happening, I would encourage them to turn the podcast off. I would also encourage them, if they are triggered, to be aware that that is something that is in their system, and they really ought to seek help talking to people, or talking to a therapist, or their clergy, or calling a suicide hotline or informational hotline, just to talk about it, to try to get that out so something like this doesn't trigger, and it'll allow more of our ability to talk about suicide in public to break the stigma for everybody that is in crisis.
That sounds like really good advice. Do you happen to have that suicide hotline number handy?
I do. I'll tell you the important one.
Okay.
And that is the text line. I believe, in my opinion, that is better than talking to a psychiatrist on the phone. What it is, the number is 741-741. And we say...
Just those six numbers?
Just those six numbers.
Oh, okay.
On your text, not a phone call.
Okay.
On the text. And what it does is, while they are looking for somebody to take your call, it's 24/7, it's free, it's national. While they're looking, what you text in goes into the computer that has over 50 or 82 million previous texts. It analyzes what you said, and then when they find the counselor to talk with you, on their screen is a message like, 54% of the people that text this are cutters. And here's the next best question to ask.
Wow.
And the reason that I like it even better than a psychiatrist is mental health, everybody that's in mental health had a way to learn about psychology and how to read people, etc. But there are 400 different modes. And Jungian and Freudian will come up with two different analyses.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, this is in the moment. This is research that just happened in the last 3 or 4 years and is happening every minute on every call.
And I would
think
that...
So it's very current.
I would think that, too, it's so specialized into this particular issue, and that's very helpful. I mean, most people who do this professionally are going to have a wide cross-section of issues that they've trained on and not necessarily be particularly strong on this particular issue of suicide.
Well, and the crisis text line is for crisis.
Right.
Most of the calls that they get are involved with suicide, but there's sexual abuse and physical abuse and depression, anxiety, all kinds of things they deal with.
All those things you could use that same number?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Yes, very different.
Let's try, if we can, remember to mention it once or twice again before we're done.
And I've got that number. The National Helpline number is 800-273-8255, and the National Text number is 741-741. And I really encourage, if you've got kids, to teach your kid that number. Because 90% of kids in crisis will not call a phone line, and they don't even talk on their cell phone. But if they know that number, they will text.
Good to know. Let's go back to what we started out with. How did you get interested and so passionate about this particular subject? What's been the process?
Because I've had lived experience. I did not attempt But I found my wife. I actually watched from outside a friend of mine take my wife to bed.
Ooh.
And in that moment, if I had had a gun, I very easily could have killed them. And I didn't. Mm-hmm. And I left, and I was very, very suicidal. And I ended up that evening calling my medical doctor.
Uh-huh.
And he said a saying that I've used many times is, "Promise me that you won't do anything until we talk again." And an hour and a half later, this was like 10:30 at night, he shows up at my house with a therapist. And that saved my life and probably could have saved somebody else's. It has really triggered that. I had a good friend that walked with me any time of the day or night. And the piece that really got me is that this was in 1974. We kept in touch, and my daughter and I moved to California. Well, we stayed in touch, and in 1982, his wife wrote me and said, "I regret telling you this, but Dan took his life by his own hand."
Oh, my goodness. That's a fellow that was walking with you all the time?
That was the guy that walked with me any hour. And it angered me, and it still does to this day, that he didn't allow me the opportunity to walk with him and to talk with him.
Right.
And so I started an organization that very year, and it now, since 96, has been the largest website in the world on men's issues. I still get almost 3 million unique hits every month.
That's very impressive, really.
And then I've started another one called ZeroAttempts.org. Mm-hmm. Which is all about suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And talks about this program and other things. So,
what's this program?
This program is called, this program is a publication that we are putting together. It's already basically put together. It's 16 pages, full four-color insert magazine that we're scheduling for all of the newspapers in Curry, Coos, and Del Norte County the month of September. And this was done over in Jackson and Josephine County last September. And we're changing part of the magazine to make it more relevant to the coast. And what we are doing differently is over there, they got 11 stakeholders that were involved, and they each kicked in $1,000 to pay for it. What we're looking at is, because I believe that suicide prevention is a village problem.
Uh-huh.
It takes a lot of different stakeholders, but it also takes all of us to really be aware of what warning signs are and then feel comfortable in going to our friend or going to our family or something and say, "Are you okay?" Instead of, "How are you doing?"
Mm-hmm.
"Are you okay?" when we're concerned about it. Or even, "Are you thinking of killing yourself? Or are you thinking of suicide?" And those two sayings were verboten here in the high school this year.
How do you mean verboten?
Because the advisors were told not to have them talk to their students about saying those words. And it was from no research, no facts. There is not an instant in research or anything else that says asking somebody if they're going to kill themselves or if they're going to commit suicide has increased their ideation around suicide, has increased their desire. What it actually has done, proven by research, is it has broken it down, and it has opened up, and the person that was that you were concerned about actually says or finds somebody that cares and is mm-hmm. open. And that's the big thing about the stigma.
Yeah.
So what we've put out, and I've got statistics on this from the Mayo Clinic and NAMI and all the major suicide prevention places and the Oregon Health Authority and the U.S. government, IHS, that there is no research that says that there's any danger in asking somebody.
So I guess that's my question. You're assuming, or maybe you know, that they don't want to ask those questions because they're afraid they're going to plant the idea or something like that?
Right.
Wow.
And that is, you know, the other interesting thing is the information that I've had here in this school district, which we have a very high suicidality rate of depression, of seriously considering suicide, and actually about 8 to 10% of the 6th, 8th, and 11th graders last year attempted suicide.
Say that again, that last part. 6 to 8%?
Actually, in Brookings School District, at Azalea, 6th grade, 13 students attempted suicide.
Out of how many?
I don't have the exact number, but probably about 125.
Uh-huh.
In the 8th graders, 10. And in 11th graders, 12.
That's
so
just
in our
crazy.
School district, 35 kids, according to their own admission in the Pride survey, attempted suicide. 69% seriously considered it, and 133 actually felt so sad that they didn't do something for 2 weeks, and the research shows that that's depression. So we had 133 kids in depression. And what I've learned is that and this was last year, that the recommendations for somebody to come in and talk to the counselor, the CCH counselor that is on school grounds, is very seldom is it administration or teachers. And that is only usually around somebody that is a problem, is causing a difficulty in class. Almost everybody else that comes in, they came in because their friend said, I think you ought to talk to the therapist. And so the kids are really tied in to how their friends are feeling, much more than the teachers that are with them every day for 186 days a year.
Yeah, I imagine that's
true. And my hope is that those teachers will learn what the risks are and be able to identify those and then reach those kids before they ever get to that tension level. And this is just the kids that reported.
That's right. I had a question there. You said that if the kids didn't do something for 2 weeks, what is it they didn't do?
The actual question said, did you ever feel so sad or hopeless almost every day for 2 weeks or more in a row that you stopped doing some usual activities? And what we know from the research, and this Pride survey has been done in our school system since 1998, and it's very valid research, and that is the definition of depression. They don't want to ask kids if you're depressed, so this is the way, and particularly around hopelessness.
I know when I was 12, I tried to commit suicide, and I don't think I even understood what death was. I just wanted a way out from what I was feeling. Luckily, I didn't know that you had to slice your wrist the other way to make it work. So I sliced my wrist, and I bled a little bit, and not much happened. And my parents came home, and life went on, and that was that. And I think I tried another time with a knife, but I couldn't actually use it against myself. That was too weird. I couldn't do it. And you know, I look back at that, and I marvel that I was ever that unhappy to begin with, but also, you know, I had a child's mind that thought of these things in very superficial terms. I had no idea what the meaning of that really was, you know.
Well, this is the real concerning point, because as we age, we get more of a reference point on how to step out, or that isn't that big a deal, or whatever. But as a child, up to 18, actually the mind doesn't totally develop until 25, has none of that background. So something happens.
You mean in terms of their, like, their coping skills
right,
and so forth?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And just how things that happen in life, major breakup in a relationship, a failure in a class, a friend having serious problems, they don't have the experience with that to know how to deal with it. And so they really, it really triggers them. And the group that I'm very concerned about is the 5 to 11-year-olds, because that group has a 100% increase in suicides in nationally in the last 7 years. And it has really been something that we're not talking in school about it. And we're not dealing with the issue, in my opinion, in a healthy way. It's touched a couple of times a year and touched almost superficially.
Like in health class or something, yeah.
And yet it doesn't get down to really noticing how somebody is and asking, are you okay?
Yeah.
And then be willing to sit there and listen and assist. And listen is the big thing. Not giving your idea or not saying, I know how you feel, or any of that, which is really discounting. He says, listen to the person. Don't solve it for them. Most of them just want to talk it out. And the really important factor here is that there was some research recently done on people in the ER that attempted suicide, and it was done the evening or the day that they attempted suicide. And they were asked, when did the thought of suicide first come in your mind? 48% said within 10 minutes of when I attempted.
Really?
10 minutes. Some immediately.
So it's just almost like an impulse.
It for a big portion of people. And in fact, there were 19 survivors off of the Golden Gate Bridge. Every one of them has said that they regretted the jump the second that they left the platform.
Oh, I bet.
So it's one of those things that they're in the emotion, and they don't have the reference point to hold back, and they jump. Or they cut their wrists. Or what's happening now, of course, 70-some percent of all of the deaths by gun, firearm, are men. Most of those are white men and middle-aged men. And we've been taught to be tough and handle it and don't be a victim and
kinds
of... Big boys don't cry.
No, you know, we're all independent
that whole
heroes.
Thing. And so we use lethal means. And what I hear therapists often say, well, that's why men kill themselves. No, they use lethal means because of the messages they've always been given of tough, don't be a victim, cowboy up, all of those kind of things. And so they cannot ask for help. And what I loved is General Schwarzkopf, who led us in the Iraq War,
I think it was Iraq,
said, I never trust a man who doesn't cry. And because he knows these tough guys bottle it up and deal with it, and then they get into some situation that they can't handle, and they wipe out a community, you know, in war or at a McDonald's or at a school or something like that.
It's sort of a tangent, but when you say that, I think about all of these mass killings that go on, that some young kid that doesn't know anything yet really goes out, and I shouldn't say that, it sounds so patronizing, you know, but as far as being sophisticated in the world, they're not yet, and they take out a bunch of lives and then turn the gun on themselves. I mean, it's like a suicide by cop, if nothing else.
Well, what's interesting, and this is from bullying and suicide. Usually bullying isn't the sole act. There are other things that get involved. But 1 out of 10 students dropped out of school because of repeated bullying. Every 30 minutes, a teenager attempts suicide due to bullying, and harassment and bullying have been linked to 75% of school shooting incidents. So they are
75%.
75%. And what we know is both the bully and the bully and the bullied child are really susceptible to suicide, both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So it is something that one of the things we really need to do is reduce bullying, which has, in my opinion, had little attention or little concentrated attention. And that, again, is shown in the Pride surveys, because the bullying rate keeps going up and the harassment rate of our kids in this school district is going up.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be going down. And we need to get both that and the suicide attempts and the attempted seriously considered suicide numbers to go down. And they've been going up for the last 5 years.
Well, let's come back to that in just a minute. Yeah. I wanted to let our readers know, in case they've just, readers, listeners, in case they just tuned in, that this is Reality Check on KCIW LP, Curry County Coast Community Radio, 100.7 FM in Brookings, Oregon. So let's talk about bullying for just a minute, because that is so intertwined with suicide. What are you finding in terms of the kids here in Brookings? It's a big problem, I take it, from what you're saying.
It still is, yes. And in paying attention to bullying, it really has to be more than a school assembly, something even once a month. It's got to be a pretty consistent thing. And both bullying and suicide get touched on, but there isn't that constant reminder. And there are research effective programs that have shown the ability to decrease bullying and significantly and suicidality, but they are more consistent than what is being done.
So this is an area that I really don't understand at all. Well, let's say I was a parent and I became aware that my child was behaving in a bullying way towards the other kids. What would you do? How would you address that?
Well, I would definitely call up a therapist.
Mm.
Because what we're dealing with now with bullying and all, we think as men and women, well, it wasn't that bad when I grew up. Yes, I was bullied, and not that bad, but this is different now. We've got a whole different culture,
mm-hmm.
and it's not getting better. It's getting more angry between each other.
Yeah.
But the other thing is cyberbullying. And what would happen when I went to school? I was in a school of 1,600 kids. My high school was 1,600 kids. My senior class was almost 500. And there were high schools across the state line that the high school, the seniors were 1,200. And something would happen in a classroom, and it would take weeks to get around the school. But here, something happens in a classroom. Somebody puts it on their Facebook or sends a message to their list on the break. That goes automatically to all their friends. They text it to all of their friends. And in the five-minute break that the kids have from going from one class to the other, the whole school can know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be true or not, but it is just really, really different. And the Mean Girls movie that came out a number of years ago, things haven't gotten any better. And in fact, I believe it, when we do research, heavy research on the last few years, I think we'll see a dramatic increase in trauma, in crisis, in depression, in all of the things that lead up to bullying. And when somebody is bullied, they spend a lot of their time trying to figure out how to get from one class to the other without being hurt. They have a very hard time concentrating on hearing what the teacher has to say and learning, having that mind free about, I want to really learn this. Instead, how, you know, they, this guy pushes me into the locker. She calls me at names and, you know, all those shameful things. And it just, we've got to pay attention and take care of these kids.
Yeah.
One of the things that we see is that a kid that's causing trouble, is loud, is making a problem in the classroom, probably has a very high ACE score. And I'm told all the student or all the teachers at in the Brookings School District took an ACE training, which is finding out during your first 18 years if 10 different things happened in your life, and like a divorce, like physical or sexual abuse, things like that. And this is all, CDC has this on their website and everything, and we do trainings here in Curry County on it. What the research has shown over the many years that this has been going on is that there are actually physical diseases with a combination of some of these things that happen in people's bodies. And so if these things happen to a kid, it's not safe to go home, or they don't get fed, or they're coming to school in dirty clothes, or they're harassed by their parent because they got a B on a subject, anything like that, they're acting out because it's a cry for help. Instead of putting them in a corner or sending them over to community bridges or sending them home or whatever, they're asking for help. They just don't know how.
I know when I had a foster child here, I was just so shocked. He came from a difficult background, and so a lot of his friends were kind of in the same boat, you know, and this one had a dead parent, that one had a parent in jail, this one had an addicted parent. I mean, every one of them had some horrific drama going on in their life that was just a huge burden for someone so young.
Yeah, and it starts so early. And one of the issues we've got here in Brookings is it's estimated in January that we had 70 to 80 homeless kids in our school system here in Brookings.
Who actually make it into school.
Right.
That's amazing.
Right. And the high incidence rates of on food stamps and meals and very low income, all that kind of stuff really impacts a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm really pleased with is the school system doing, and I believe it's free lunch and free breakfast for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no stigma about getting food.
Yeah,
and if the kid
really
doesn't
good.
Come to class with breakfast, their brain can't work. And they really need that. And I'm just glad that they finally implemented that program.
I think this is one of those things, not only have you just educated me with these statistics you just threw out about how many kids have tried suicide here and what the statistics are overall, but I think so many of us that have maybe moved here from somewhere else and don't really know what's going on amongst the folks that have lived here a long time, but this has been a community of poverty. It's been a community that did not have resources to take care of themselves very well. And there's a huge, huge, almost like a divide between the more wealthy retirees and the folks that have been sort of struggling all their lives and maybe for generations. And I don't think the two groups know much about each other.
No, this is still very heavily, we've still got two mills in town. We're still very heavy in the fishing trade. It's a working person's community.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not getting any better. And we have a real big difficulty of getting mental health services. This is the same in Del Norte County. The whole top of California and most of Oregon are in dire straits in this area.
Well, it's not gotten any easier for working class people to make ends meet. And that's part of the deal. It's not improving at all. So that can only add to the problem.
In the state budget, if it passes, there is a good portion of money in for mental health. And I really hope that happens. The second problem we have here in Curry is being able to get housing. Mm-hmm. Because what happened in 2008, a lot of those homes that went on the market were bought up for vacation rentals, not for rentals.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really shut down on the amount of homes that people can come. Like a doctor, we have trouble getting doctors up at Curry General. They had two not too long ago, and neither one of them could find housing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like...
And the same goes for, you know, waitresses in the restaurants kinds of things
Low-income
like that.
Low-income housing is just...
Forget about
really,
it.
Really, really tough.
But getting back to the legislation you said for mental health, that would include services for kids as well as adults and suicide intervention services. And, I mean, what is the scope of this bill that's coming through?
Well, I'm not sure the details.
Okay.
But I know in 2017, we introduced a bill, SB 48. And that bill was a bill that would mandate therapists, ER, doctors, GPs to take at least 6 hours of suicidal training every 6 years. So an average of 1 hour of training a year.
Well, it's something.
The sad thing is that Cobalt, which is therapists, and a couple other organizations, which are ER and GP doctors, lobbied against it.
Really?
And they got it pulled so that it is only a suggestion to get any training at all. Basically what they lobbied for their members is, we're making it so you never have to get training. And my understanding is to become a therapist in Oregon, they don't need any mental health training around suicidality. So many of these people have nothing when somebody goes into the office and says, I'm in crisis. We are bringing that back up, and I don't remember the bill number, but it's being brought up in this session because 2018, nothing goes through on the even year sessions. So if we don't get it through this session, we got to wait till 2021. Because every other year, we've got a five-week session for legislators. And then a year on odd years, like this year, we do a lot of legislation. So we're really pushing to get this legislation through. And I hope the legislators don't give in to the demands not to add 6 hours. It doesn't add any more hours that they're required to take. Most of the hours that they're required to take aren't designed for a particular reason. There is ethics that they're required to do and several other areas.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got, I would say, and this is off the top, probably 60 hours that they've got free choice.
Mm-hmm.
And that could easily fit in to 10% of that be suicide.
Well, especially when you consider that suicide is life and death.
Yes.
It's pretty important. If you might be an inept therapist in other areas, but you're not putting people's lives at risk usually.
Right. Well, and every suicide attempt impacts 100 people.
Hmm.
So it in fact, one of the things that is in the magazine that we're going to be inserting in the newspaper is two pages on talking about suicide and the workplace. because nobody really thinks about, even a small business that's got like five people in it, if somebody is impacted by a suicide there, it could impact 5% or 20% of productivity in that office, and it can impact the other people in the office.
Right.
So we really have to up our game, really, and learn more about suicide risk and helping people through different programs, and each one of us becoming open to talking about suicide.
Let's come back to that in just a minute. I'd love it if you would share those phone numbers again. And in the meantime, I'd like any listeners to know that have just tuned in that you're listening to Reality Check on KCIW LP, Curry Coast Community Radio, 100.7 FM in beautiful Brookings, Oregon. So those phone numbers?
Yes, the National Hope Line is 800-273-8255. And we encourage people to text SOS to 741-741. And for those of us that are not really familiar with your cell phone, that's not a phone call, it's a text.
Okay, great. So you're talking about what, as individuals, we can do. Say you do think you have someone who's at risk. What do you do? I mean, besides hopefully saying, are you considering suicide? Are you okay? You know, and listening. What else?
Well, the very first thing is to have a place that you don't get interrupted. Mm-hmm. So not out in a coffee shop or something like that. And if you're, it's so nice to be able to shut off your cell phone instead of having to shut off the house phone.
Right.
That kind of thing. But it's really to sit down with the people and really let them know that you care and that you're willing to listen. And actually, before that, what you need to know is the warning signs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a list of them, and I've got all of that on the web. And then learn...
Can you rattle off a couple of them anyway that would be helpful for people to know?
Yeah, when somebody is showing a marked change in behavior, attitudes, or appearance, talking about suicide, making statements about feeling hopeless or helpless or worthless, a deepening of depression, taking unnecessary risks, or exhibiting self-destructive behavior. Simple things like crying, fighting, taking risky behaviors, doing things like that. Uh-huh. And there's a large list of it, but it gives you a sense, if somebody you know, or you've got a family member, and all of a sudden they're acting differently, or they're withdrawing, or they're going to their room a lot,
mm-hmm.
or they're not meeting down at McDonald's for coffee at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And or for men, over 50% of men who kill themselves are because of a relational problem. So if a man's going through a divorce or a breakup or something like that, men particularly go to him because you understand the difficulty about talking about feelings and emotion. And go to him and say, hey, Jim, are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm here. I'm here for you. Call me anytime. And then be there for them.
And you were mentioning earlier about not problem solving. And the other thing I would say is that sometimes we have a habit of somebody says, you know, oh, I stubbed my toe and I think it's broken. Oh, you know, like 8 years ago, I broke my leg, and you go off into talking about themselves. It's really important in a time like that to keep the focus on the other person and the difficulties they're having, as well as not trying to solve the problems.
Yeah, so true. And the other piece is that if they are suicidal while you're talking to them, don't leave them.
Mm-hmm.
Because just be their best friend in that moment, and talk to them about options, and we can go find a therapist or your clergy or 911. I'll pass on talking about 911.
We'll come back to that maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I really hope that all of our law enforcement take CIT or one of the trainings on how to deal with suicidal victims.
Do you know if they do?
Some of them have. Mm-hmm. And I think all of them that go on road calls need to, mm-hmm. because it's really different. I've heard instances where from people that had been suicidal and called 911, and they will not call 911 again, is that somebody came to them, law enforcement came to them with a dog, or with a gun drawn, or with a taser. And if you're bipolar or manic at that time, that's a trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And they may go off.
Yeah.
And these things happen in ERs all the time. And the ERs that have a patrol person on staff with a gun kill a lot of patients. But the ones that don't have, they know how to deal with these people. And yes, you might get a tray thrown at you. Those kind of things.
Right.
But they know the things to do to calm somebody down instead of doing things that actually trigger an increased reaction from somebody that can't help it.
I know one fear that a friend of mine that was suicidal had was when he was, I guess, reported for being suicidal. They committed him against his will and for observation, I guess. They wouldn't let him out, and he raised holy whatever to get out. And he was a person of means and could call his lawyers and all of that and got himself out, but he would never reach out again because he had this experience. And of course, those folks were just trying to help him, but it seemed like it exacerbated the situation because of the way it was handled.
Well, and one of the things that we have trouble with our military and with law enforcement is that if somebody says, hey, I need mental health, the chances are they're going to be put on leave of absence.
Right.
And they have the possibility, a real possibility, of losing their commission or losing their position, something that they may have 5 years in or planned for 20 years. Now, there's one good aspect here for law enforcement, and I wish they'd do this for military. Is there's a group called Cop Line, and that's the URL for it. And that's all law enforcement individuals that are available 24/7 to talk to somebody with the guarantee that they will not report.
Mm-hmm.
They are not mandatory reporters, and they won't. And some people are bothered by that, but the piece is, without that guarantee, many of those men or women are not going to come forth and get solved. And law enforcement is the sixth highest rate of suicide.
Yeah, it's very
in
common.
Profession.
Yeah.
So it's like, let's get on top of this thing. And military, we had 40% of the suicides in 2017 in Curry County were veterans.
Yeah, that seems so important. We have so many veterans here, and I mean, we all know that that's been an area of trouble for folks that have been through those kind of experiences, that they do tend to have a higher rate of suicide, and we've got so many vets here.
Yeah, big time. I want to give you a little statistic.
Sure.
That in the U.S., this is 2016 versus 2017.
Mm-hmm.
In all of these except one, we had the highest rate we've ever had.
Uh-huh.
47,000 people, over 47,000 people in the U.S. killed themselves.
Wow.
Up 4.7% from the year before. 825 Oregonians killed themselves that same year, up 6.4%. 107 kids, 10 to 24, killed themselves in Oregon last year, up 8.4%. 14 Curry County citizens killed themselves last year, up 21%.
Wow.
And also, I've already said about the veterans at 40% versus the previous year. In Oregon,
how much was that up?
That was up 40%.
Oh, okay.
And in Oregon, veterans, 161 veterans killed themselves in that period of time. It was not the highest. The highest was in 2014, but all of, and was 169 vets. All of the others, that's the highest rate we've ever had. And wow. Things don't look like they're turning around. Actually, nationally, the year 15, between 15 and 16, the percentage was 1.8% increase. Last year, it was 4.7.
Wow. One of the other demographics I think I heard somewhere that's having a lot of trouble is the elderly, that their suicide rates are going up as well. Is that something you've...
No, not per capita.
Not per capita,
and,
okay.
And it's not... Middle age is the big one.
Oh.
The increases with the 10 to 24, that's the second leading cause of death, and those are all increasing too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's middle age, primarily white men.
That's what I actually did hear.
And most of the ones
Age starting at 35 or 50 or...
35 to...
35
to... I think 35 to 54.
Okay.
And with the elderly, most of that is around health issues and financial issues.
Mm-hmm.
So they've gotten into a bind, or with the health issue, you know, they're becoming senile and or other things are happening. And what we saw is statistically something like 70% of a family's, of an elderly person's wealth goes in the last 3 years of their life. So they get to that place of, I'm not going to have anything for my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just laying here in bed, and I can't remember who my wife is or my husband is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it has a different reading. Interesting, too, is euthanasia in Oregon. The last year I have statistics for that is 2012. In all of Oregon, there were only 77. So there aren't that many people compared to the 800, less than 10% of the people are using that way out. And I can, having had a stroke and having seen my mind losing track and all, I can see how that might be a sensible way to go.
Yeah. But it's not that easy to do, although that's a whole nother show.
Yeah, right.
And that may be part of the reason the numbers are lower, really. But I want to go back to the 35 to 54-year-old white males, did you say? Why do you think that group is being impacted so much right now?
Well, the seven-year itch. Relationships breaking down. They're in a place where younger people are taking the jobs, especially in technology, in professional. And when somebody gets to 55, that is a really tough, 55 to 64 is a really tough age group.
Especially to think about starting over in some new field if you've been doing the same thing for a long time. We just don't have the job security that we used to have that would make somebody's life seem stable and secure during those years.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, one thing I wanted to get back to, too, is, you know, if you take it on yourself to talk to someone that you think is at risk, especially a male, I think, probably is a good idea to ask if there are any guns and ask if you can keep them for a while or whatever.
Yeah, around that, keeping two things are lethal, not drugs. And that's not as lethal as a gun. one of the things about guns, and we're in a very heavy gun culture, and what we know is that males, 72% of male suicides are by gun. The suicides for women by guns are going up. Mm-hmm. And it's something like 34% of their suicides are by guns.
Okay.
Now, they have a higher survival rate. There's 85% of men who attempt suicide by gun actually succeed. With women, it's a much lower percentage because they don't shoot themselves in the head. And it's around appearance. Hmm. And so they are using a gun more, but using it less effectively. Now, what I recommend is I really hold men who own guns and have friends who own guns responsible for their friends. And I want them to make an agreement with at least one of their friends that if I'm feeling really depressed, if I'm feeling suicidal, I want to call you and have you come get my bullets.
Yeah.
Hold my bullets. Now, this is, and ideally, you hold my bullets regardless of whether I ask for them back or not, if you read that I'm still suicidal. However, also have the agreement, if you feel the need, that my agreement with you is hold my bullets, but if I ask them for them back, regardless of my condition, you have to give them back to me. I believe what we know the first thing is 48% of people who attempted suicide did it within 10 seconds or 10 minutes of first thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've got is good research on the three-day rule. If we can postpone up to 3 days and have the person hold off for 3 days, almost invariably they see that they aren't suicidal in that 3 days, that there are good places and there are drop-offs and there are good places, but there are, it's not something that says for the next 3 days, every minute I want to kill myself.
Right, and that's where that thing the doctor said that you started out talking about comes in so handy about, look, just promise me you won't do anything until we get face-to-face.
Right.
You know, and
or talk again.
Talk and, again, however
yeah,
you want
right,
to put it, but
right.
Put in delays. Mm. Just
right.
Give that person time to calm down and rethink everything, because they probably wouldn't be suicidal once they had a chance to think about it.
Right. People who attempt, only 10% attempt again.
That's amazing.
So 90% of them find that way to open up. I am so glad that I didn't kill myself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm really glad that I didn't kill somebody else.
Yeah.
Because that would have been trauma for... Well, both of them would be trauma for my daughter and both for many friends of mine.
But you know, I'm thinking about, too, we kind of think of the typical teenagers going through these phases of withdrawing and what's wrong, nothing, what are you doing, nothing, you know, and going and sulking in the room, and that we just kind of blame it on hormones and going through being a teenager. But it could be so much more.
Well, and the difficult thing
way to know the difference.
That the therapists are telling me is girls are becoming like guys.
They are, yeah.
They smile it off.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just, oh, I'm fine.
Right.
And smile, and they're going through trauma, major trauma. And so we've got to really pay attention to kids and hopefully have that open relationship. The other problem in Brookings is so many of our kids are not with their parents.
Right.
They're with grandparents and all of that kind of stuff.
Foster parents. Yeah.
And disconnected from family.
Before we run out of time, let's go back and talk a little more about the program.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. How I'm doing it differently is instead of going after the big stakeholders, and I've got United Way, all of the money is in a fund that the United Way can't spend on anything but this program. And they are collecting all of the donations, and then they will pay the printer, they will pay the newspapers for the insert, and if we have extra money over, we've got a program to develop mini grants up to $500 for any 501c3 who will agree to do a public program during the month of September of this year. So the publication will come out the first week in September, and then hopefully we'll have all of these events going on in the three counties. And so somebody will say, hey, Lee, I saw you on that magazine, and open up that real simple line of communication that says, oh, we might talk about suicide. And then these events are going on, and it makes it a lot more communal to talk about suicide. So the group that meets down at McDonald's for breakfast every day, hopefully they start talking about it and make it like I'm being treated for cancer, or I had a colonoscopy, or I broke my arm, or any of those
getting
things.
Getting away from the stigma.
Yeah, and I'm really depressed. I'm not sleeping well right now, etc. So what I'm asking is not only clubs and organizations and nonprofits and the fire department and first responders and churches and everything contributing just $50, and they'll get their name on the publication, but I'm asking individuals, because I really believe if we take this on, we're number one in Oregon. Curry County is number one in per capita suicides.
Wow.
We don't need that number one category. It'd really be nice that we were no better than 26th, because that's how big we are, and maybe we get 36th in per capita suicides. But that'd be really neat. And if we get a lot of individuals that put their name on the back of that publication, all it costs is $50.
So how does a person do that if they want to contribute that $50?
Well, the easiest way is to go to the website www.zeroattempts.org/finding-hope.html.
Would you say that one more time?
www.zeroattempts.org/finding-hope.html.
And we'll try and put that in the notes to the podcast for this broadcast. Gordon, we've run out of time. This is one of those subjects we could have done 2 hours easily. Thank you so much for bringing this information. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, Lee, thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to future podcasts.
Sounds good. This has been Lee Tooley, your host, and Pi White is our technical support and co-producer. This has been Reality Check on KCIW, and thank you for listening.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.